This is sex. Everyone gets what they want. This is sexploration.
Explore.
Play.
This is Sexploration with Monica.
Sex is proof that God loves us and wants us to have fun.
Sexploration with Monica on FCCFreeRadio.com.
Tonight on Sexploration with Monica, we'll talk about the importance of consent, how you can make consent sexy. We'll talk about this amazing live sex show called Come and Glitter. And when I say come, I don't mean C-O-M-E. We'll also be talking about this project from the University of Amsterdam that's about countering sex negativity with the alternative porn scene here in San Francisco. That's kind of a neat project. Rukama Vanderhorn is here. Rukama, welcome back.
Be here.
Yeah. And our token straight guy is Malcolm from The Verve Show. Ava Solanas is joining us from Come and Glitter. You have a lot of different hats that you wear. Welcome to Sexploration with Monica.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. You're a hairy girl. You do hairy girl porn. I love that.
I am, yes.
Well, see, I didn't even know there was hairy girl porn until Sandy Bottoms told me about it. And I was like,
Neither did I.
So what that means is you don't have to shave anything, and you're like, yes, I am sexy.
No, it's true, and I haven't shaved for years, and it was so wonderful to like come here and realize that, wow, I could get paid to just be the
be
way
hairy, I am. Be hairy, be hairy, wow. Yeah, I love that. Because, I mean, what is waxing all about? We have this huge war with hair, and we pay money to have people inflict huge amounts of pain on us. It's very weird.
Yeah. I've actually never shaved my legs.
Never?
Nope. People love that.
Well, I've even shaved my legs. Well, I used to run, and so I shaved my legs.
Oh,
so
cool.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're right. It's a waste of money. Well, and if I want pain, I can negotiate something else. Right, exactly.
You don't have to like pay some person to rip your follicles out, which I think is
and
I
it's hot.
That's neat. Yeah.
Hairy girls are sexy.
Yeah, that's
they
right.
Are.
And what I love is that there's so many different flavors of sexy in San Francisco, particularly Rukama. We're going to talk about that later, how San Francisco is this little bubble and there's so many things going on in that bubble.
Yeah, there is definitely.
I mean, you already have way more than you need from your thesis now.
Yeah, I'm way over that already, and I'm not done. I love my research. I just don't want to stop.
She's not going home.
Ever. I'm not going home.
No.
It's too sexy here.
Who wants to marry me?
Yay!
I do.
Okay. All right. Done.
After the show.
Malcolm and Rukama. It's a match made in heaven. So let's talk about Come and Glitter is coming up tomorrow. It's a private event. You can't get tickets. You have to request an invitation at their website, comeandglitter.com. And that's because it's so dangerously sexy and subversive.
And sold out.
And sold out.
So you can email us and get on the waiting list, but you'll have to wait for the next show.
Because you are going to do multiple shows.
Yes, this is the beginning. This is the premiere of a long series, hopefully.
And it's not just about, oh, sexy, we're doing a sexy live sex show performance thing. It's also part of a support group for sex workers, started by you and Maxine Holloway, who's awesome.
Yeah, we had these visions. We were hanging out one night and talking about community and things that we wanted and things that we've kind of felt were lacking in our lives. And we were toying around with the idea of getting a group of us together and peer-to-peer support, which I believe on many levels, because I am involved in numerous projects that involve a lot of peer-to-peer support, is one of the most effective and powerful ways to work through things, to explore new ideas, to learn. So we're trying to start this group and hopefully some skill shares. And I'm really excited to see where things go. But we
let's talk about sex worker skill sharing. Like what sort of skill shares? Like you do workshops where the sex workers are teaching other sex workers. Mm-hmm. So it's not like anyone's being condescending. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows where everyone's coming from because they're peers.
Right. Yeah, it could be anything from like a webcam 101 workshop.
How to do webcam.
How to do webcam. How to, you know, find more viewers. How to promote yourself. I know some sex workers who have done some squirting workshops. Been requested of me and like my hairy porn circle to teach some folks how to squirt. So, yeah, anything. And that's the beauty of this project is that there aren't any rules and we can just go with it and create new things.
So when you're teaching people how to squirt, what do you teach them?
Oh.
Anatomy?
Yeah, a lot of it is about anatomy. Mm-hmm. A lot of it, I will say, is about like spending a lot of time exploring your body, mm-hmm. yourself. You can then tell other people how mm-hmm. to help you squirt. Yeah, anatomy, a lot of muscle control.
You'd interesting.
Surprise with just knowing.
Kegels will take you a long way.
Feel, yeah, it's so true. It's so true to feel certain muscles and recognize how that can be like a repetitive thing in your life. And you can then sort of begin to control your squirting abilities.
As if sex and control. Yes. Seriously. Okay. But let's talk a little bit about like how porn can work as a sex educational device. Mm-hmm. And how that kind of funnels into your work.
Yeah.
In so many ways.
I think there's a lot of potential for some porn to be an amazing tool for sex ed. When I was younger, I started consuming porn, I think, when I was 14. Because I was like looking, I was really just searching for bodies that looked like mine.
Mm.
And I came mm-hmm. out as queer when I was really young. I think I was like 13 or 14 too. So it was this never ending search to find representation, like what I looked like, what other queer people were doing. And then I discovered queer porn when I was a little bit older. That was really key in my sex ed and teaching myself about like different ways that people talk about their bodies, different things that queer people do during sex.
There's different ways that queer people talk about their bodies during sex?
There are different ways that everybody talks about their body differently, and that also.
I know, but everyone thinks, oh, the way I do it is the normal way. Everyone does it like me.
Oh, right.
Sure. I wrote a book on it.
You wrote the book?
I wrote,
a book.
I wrote a book on it. I can tell you that copy.
About how you talk about your body during sex?
Yes.
Okay, how do you talk about your body during sex, Malcolm? I'm not going to buy your book, P.S.
Oh, okay. Well, then
I should just tell me right now.
Neither.
All right.
How do you say? Do you say penis? Do you say wang? Do you say my love member?
Well, it depends. It depends.
My shakti.
If I'm just entering, then it is my member, my man.
My turgid manhood.
Whoa. Yes. If I'm about to have an orgasm, then it is my cock.
Right,
at
of
that
course.
Point,
yes,
it becomes
right.
my cock.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. my manly cock. And so.
You only get three.
You know, I only get three, huh?
And then it becomes your wonder worm, your wonder wang.
No,
in the sweet repository.
Oh my God, I'm losing
right
it over here.
Okay, sorry. We're squeaking out Ava Solaris. That's amazing.
Okay.
He squeaked you out already. That's awesome. Okay, good. We'll reel it back in. We can talk more about live sex shows. So the name of the show is Come and Glitter. So come,
uh-huh.
like the ejaculate.
Uh-huh.
It could be female ejaculate, could be male ejaculate.
It is so totally female ejaculate. Y'all just wait until tomorrow night.
Yay! So tell us about some of the things that we aren't going to see because we can't get tickets
right,
anymore.
Right, that's right. It's sold out. Sorry. I'll just tease you with that. We have some amazing performers. Dorian Faust opening the show with Burlesque. Maxine Holloway and Courtney Trouble are performing.
Doing what?
Well, you'll just have to find out.
No, I can't get tickets, remember? Like, okay, so people are getting up there, they're making out, they're taking off their clothes. Mm-hmm.
So the thing with Come and Glitter that Maxine and I had talked a lot about was I am a theater dork. Mm-hmm. I have a background in doing a lot of theater, but I also think that there should be a place in theater for some sex. So a lot of the scenes you'll see, some will have some dialogue. They might sort of set the stage for a theme of sorts. I'm in a scene with Nikki Silver, who's the goddess of the hairy porn world, and we are doing sort of a shoe fetish, hair fetish, power exchange scene, and I'll leave the end for everybody who's going to be there. It's a surprise. It's just a really wide range. There's some age play, some bondage, some femme domination. It's a little bit of everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
And for some reason, this makes me think about masturbation and the importance of masturbation, especially as a sex educator working in the porn world, which I think that porn people who work in porn are kind of sex educators.
Mm-hmm.
You talked a little bit about that. But then the critical importance of masturbation, and then also like it's not a sexual pleasure isn't about what someone is doing to you.
Mm-hmm.
You gonna have any masturbation self-love going on up there?
Yeah, actually, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what people do in their individual scenes, whether or not they're working with a partner, because I know that specifically in my scene, there's a moment when Nikki Silver is fucking me, but I then sort of take over as well. And so it's both of our hands inside of me. And I'm instructing her, and it's just this really intense moment.
Very consensual, sure.
Yeah, really, really excited. We just had a practice today.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you're feeling all like, woo.
Yeah.
This person is great. Wow. And in your normal life, you do rape crisis counseling, mm-hmm. and you also do workshops about consent and survivorship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So how do you balance those two worlds? I mean, oftentimes people don't talk about rape, especially in the porn world, unless they're like, yay, rape fantasy, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of hard because sometimes it's the big elephant in the room, mm-hmm. you know?
It's so true. Yeah, I do rape crisis counseling, and I've done that for, I think, about the past 4 years. And it all like comes back to this moment of me remembering what my life was like as a younger teen, and how much I felt like I would have benefited from, you know, A, somebody talking to me about what rape is. And luckily that happened, and like I had a really great support system eventually. But also just being really real about sex and about the power mm-hmm. that things like masturbation can have and play in like a long journey of healing and sexual healing. And so that's like a lot of my story, is spending a great deal of time as like a younger teen trying to figure out like what was happening, what was this trauma that happened, how can I heal from it. I'm like too nervous to let other people into my life. And so then mm-hmm. I kind of embarked on this like, I'm going to figure out all of the crazy things that my body can do, and I want to figure out how to have like the best sex I can have. Right now it's just with myself, but like my sex life now I feel like is 1,000 times better than it ever could have been because of that time that I spent focusing on like regaining like just trust with myself.
Right.
Basically. So I started leading some workshops with youth in the city. I recently did one, and it was about consent and sexy negotiation. Did the workshop with somebody, and we did some demos, which I think is really powerful.
Right.
And not something that you get to see as like a young person. And I really, went to a youth center back where I was born and raised, and we didn't have that. Like, yes, there were wonderful adults who talked to us all about sex, but we didn't have demos. I didn't know what this looked like. I didn't know what it looked like to ask somebody if you can fuck them.
Right.
Or ask somebody to put a glove on, and to like see that play out is so powerful and so hot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially there are people who can ask for consent in a really not only not creepy way, mm-hmm. but also because, and then it's not annoying. Like, is it okay if I touch you here? Is this okay? Is this okay? You know, that's not always going to play very well in a sexy scene.
Sometimes.
But there are
depends,
ways
yeah.
that you can have it play really well. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I've had like Reed Mihalko, you know, he asks for consent, and mm-hmm. I'm like, yes. Mm-hmm. You know, or, you know, hey,
right,
whatever, you know. So what are some ways that you think that people, some easy tips just over the radio? Because, I mean, sometimes asking for consent can look like petting a cat mm-hmm. in a particular way. You know, you can tell if a cat wants to be petted.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But there's ways to do it verbally as well, which might mm-hmm. work better for the radio.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that sometimes it can be really hot. If, like, you know, you're making out with somebody or whatever, and you have an idea of something that you would want to do, to just, like, suggest it, be like, hey, I would really like to go down on you. How do you feel about that? And then that gives somebody the chance to be like, actually, I, like, not really into that tonight, but I would really love it if, like, you could fuck me with that strap on.
Right.
And so, like, you're still talking about sex, and it's still really hot, and you haven't, like, lost the vibe. So that's one way. And then also, this is just my own thing. I love to know what people like certain parts of their body to be called. Because
mm-hmm, everyone has different ways of talking about
absolutely.
Their parts.
Absolutely. And I'm a talker during sex, and so I like to be able to talk, and I like to know, you know, what somebody's going to find hot. And so that's kind of a thing that I'll throw in, like, early in the game and be like, I think you're really hot. Like, what words, you know, right. can I use? And then that's sometimes a turn on for them, because then they're like, oh, like, talk about my cunt or.
Right. Well, if sometimes you say cunt to someone and they're going to be like, oh, I can't believe you said that.
Right.
And then other people were like, well, actually, I don't have a cunt. I have a front hole.
Right. Exactly.
And, or, you know, they don't have, you know, whatever it is. So you want to make sure, especially when you're dealing with the transgender population, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes the word that you think is going to be appropriate to their genitals, they're like, well, actually, that's like a word that you use with people that aren't of my gender,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm. and yeah, and I always tell people, I'm like, don't say vagina. You're gonna remind me of the doctor's office, and that's not
Precisely.
What I'm into right now.
Exactly.
So.
Right. Where yeah. I'm all like, oh, vagina, right. yeah. and other people are like, well, that means sheath, and so it's like in contradiction to a penis. And I don't have sex with penises, and so vagina is like a word of the conquerors, and I don't use it. And I was like, oh. Okay.
Yeah.
you know, so it's important because mm-hmm. everyone's coming from a different place.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about doing community organizing, because that's something else that you do with both Come and Glitter mm-hmm. and probably some other workshops that you're
mm-hmm.
doing.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the projects that I would like to mention is Maxine Holloway and I have put together a series of panels about consent.
With Feminipotence.
With Feminipotence, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those panels have been really, really amazing and super inspiring. The first one was about consent and sexual healing. And then the next one, we had one about consent and BDSM. And the most recent one was about consent and sex work, which was fabulous. Like, I wish it could have gone on for, like, 3 hours.
Really?
Just so much to cover.
Why was it so important, do you think?
Because, well, when we say sex work, it's this, like, umbrella term.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way that consent plays out, whether you're escorting or whether you are in porn or whether you're on webcam, is really different and really complicated, but really, really important. And so the more we can have these conversations about negotiation, whether it's with our partners in our lives or with clients or with viewers, I think we're just moving toward like safer experiences and more empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
For
well,
all people involved.
I think people have this idea that sex workers will consent to anything mm-hmm. and it's about money,
mm-hmm.
which, can you say more about that?
Yeah, I can actually speak to how I will use it, like, on a webcam, because I won't do anything on webcam. And there are, I have, like, certain things that I will only do for X amount of, like, tokens or X amount of money.
Because it's so, special.
Yeah, yeah, because, no, I'm not going
to,
like...
Actually, I'm not going to do that.
I'm not going to fuck myself for 80 tokens. Like, nice, like, try, but no.
Really? Wait, how much is 80? Is that it a lot?
It's like $8.
Oh, okay.
Like,
got
no,
it.
Hell no. and so, yeah, it's about then
and how... And
how
do you fuck yourself?
Oh.
I mean, are there lots of different ways?
Are there lots of different ways?
Just wondering, because I mean, you know.
Toys, I got my hands.
Okay.
I can talk you through fantasies.
Right.
Yeah, so it's about negotiating. Like, well, I won't fuck myself for 80 tokens, but I'll, like, rub lotion all over my tits for 80 tokens. You know, so it's so I don't have to be like, no, I'm not going to do that. Why would you even ask? But it's kind of
right.
still in the moment, even with viewers.
Right.
You
stay
can keep
in
it.
Connection
yeah.
with them and,
mm-hmm.
you know, seeing, hey, I can see why you'd want to see me doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can probably see me doing that for
or
some other amount.
Take me to private or take me to group. Right. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of actually having like a real time conversation with the people with whom you're doing sex work, even though they're not in the room.
Mm-hmm.
That must be interesting because they have this feeling of anonymity. Mm-hmm. So they're not as maybe... guarded or what's the word I'm looking for? Self-monitoring,
mm-hmm.
you know? So they're all like, here's my deepest, darkest,
mm-hmm.
bleh,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How
yeah.
do you deal with that?
I get so excited
really?
About it. Yeah,
awesome.
It's just, it's great. And I love it when people share their fantasies with me. And my friend Bianca Stone, who's also another hairy porn performer, and I are starting this, like, I guess, yeah, a series of webcam shows. We're doing kinky fitness classes.
Hmm.
So with the hope that, like, viewers will
You get to watch
work
you
out.
Working out? Awesome. You're
I have
not
a,
only
I have
do
a
I get paid
thing.
To work out.
I like doing, like, fitness dom work.
Okay.
So like,
what does that mean?
Like, forced workout.
Oh, and you have to do, you're bad, so you're going to do 5 push-ups right now.
Well, I was going to say, like, well, yeah, if, like, you don't do 10 push-ups, then you're going to, like, get a spanking or this
right.
or that. So.
Right.
So we're going to start doing this series of
That's
kinky
smart.
Fitness classes on webcam.
You
so
get
there's
going to
be lots
in.
Of room for negotiation, lots of talking about, like, what we want to do, what viewers want to see, what can they get out of it. I'm looking forward to that.
No, that sounds really fun. So as you're working with you work with youth mm-hmm. in kind of doing the workshops, the queer, some of the self-esteem stuff, mm-hmm. survivorship, mm-hmm. consent, negotiation. Do you find that you have to, first of all, avoid saying that you do any work with webcam or anything like that? Mm-hmm. Probably avoid talking about cum and glitter. I mean, do you mm-hmm. find that porn stigmatizes you in some way sometimes? Or do you find that you can be pretty open about it?
It here depends. In San Francisco. I try to be sensitive to the age group that I'm working with.
Right, because youth can mean
youth
different things.
Youth is a really general term that a lot of people throw around, and it can mean anything from like age like 13 to 17 or age 18 to 24. And so if I'm talking to like people who are my peers in like the 18 to 24 age bracket, then I might be more open about the work that I do. It would depend on who's in the room. Communities are small, so I often like know people who are in workshops. But if it's a younger crowd, it's not really important. Like, my investment in sex education is not exclusive to my involvement in porn. It's kind of this lifelong thing. Sometimes it comes up, sometimes it doesn't.
Well, right. I'm just curious. When you are talking with your peers mm-hmm. and you do happen to mention what you do, mm-hmm. what is the reaction?
I think it depends. It really depends. Sometimes people have a lot of questions, and sometimes I don't have the answers because I'm still pretty new to the industry, but there really hasn't been a whole lot of negative
Yeah, you
response.
Don't get the, gosh, you seem so normal for someone who does porn. Or you seem so smart for someone who does porn. Maxine told me that she got that uh-huh. a couple times doing yeah. some presentations. And you're like, I know you mean that as a compliment.
Right.
But that is not, no.
Not hot, nope. Nice try again, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it really hasn't come up as this thing that's like a horrible, yeah, super stigmatized. Yeah, I don't know. It's been
Have
interesting.
You told your family back home?
Absolutely not. No. Mm-hmm. It will be interesting. I have some family coming to visit me soon. And with the Cum and Glitter and the success that we've had so far with it being mm-hmm. sold out mm-hmm. and just how well things are working, I've been mm-hmm. thinking about telling some of them because they, at least, yeah, some of them. I don't know. It's definitely, I'm not sure yet. Mm. That's a challenging.
No, it's totally challenging. I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like, especially if they're religious or, mm-hmm. you know, if you think that they're going to tell someone else who's going to tell
or
someone.
Second wave feminists.
Oh, which you're saying second wave feminists are typically anti-porn feminists.
Hating on the porn. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, all porn is rape.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Which is something that some feminists believe. But, you know, of course, the difference between consensual porn and rape is very significant, mm-hmm. particularly for the women who are doing the porn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, feminism. It's such an interesting thing because, you know, many people think, you know, how could a whore be a feminist or how could a sex worker be a feminist? But there's this great book called Whores and Other Feminists. Jill Nagel wrote it. She also lives here in the Bay Area. Doesn't do so much work in the sex work community anymore, but she's just an amazing editor in this, you know, from Annie Sprinkle to Carol Queen did a contribution. It's a wonderful book. I'd recommend it to anyone. Whores and Other Feminists.
Whores and Other Feminists. Okay.
Yeah,
great.
It's a really good
put
one.
That on my list.
Exactly. So, Rukama, so you've been doing this work in San Francisco, talking to people who are doing porn and looking at sex-positive communities. You've found so much that you're thinking of applying for a doctorate rather than just a master's?
Yes, that's right. I've been doing my research now for about 6 weeks, mm-hmm. and it's been overwhelming. It's been a lot of information, a lot of events, a lot of people I've met, and I have... I'm way beyond the information that I need for just a master's thesis, so I'm going to apply for a PhD position and
Yay.
Hope to come back and do more research.
So what sorts of things are you finding out? Is there some common themes?
Yes. Well, actually, I'm just trying to follow my research question as much as possible, although I get so much information that I get more information than just my research question. But the question originally was to find out about women's sense of security while working in porn. And the sense of security is in the broadest sense, so existentially as well as socially. And
What do you mean by existential security?
That is their own feeling of well-being, like their emotional well-being, their physical well-being, their... their own self, sense of self, mm-hmm. and self-consciousness and these things. And socially has a lot to do with what Eva just said, like how she can actually, if she can tell her other job, if she can be open about her work in porn, or if she can be open to her family about it, and if not, if that affects her sense of security, if she doesn't have that support
right,
from her
family.
Right, if
they find out, you could get fired, you could lose your income, job.
Yeah, or lose your family support, mm-hmm. or your friends, or all these kind of things. So that is basically my research topic, and I've spoken to a lot of women who work in porn, but also who work in other fields of sex work, and I get a lot of different answers. So a lot of it is about motivations for working in porn, and I have learned things that are so interesting because I have read the book Horse and Other Feminists, and it was was on my literature list.
It's great, isn't it?
I really, yeah, really love really that. But most academic works are written about either the second wave feminist point of view that porn is by definition rape, or it is either completely empowering, and it's not like there's a lot in the middle. Like,
yeah, and sometimes sex work isn't empowering.
That's right. Sometimes it's also just a job that can suck sometimes.
Yeah.
And it is
literally.
Yeah, also literally, yeah.
But that seems better than figurative sucking, so anyway.
Yeah, but what I've heard so far, it's like, it can be fun, it can increase people's independence, it can be a choice to do, like, I'd much rather have sex on camera for a few hours per week than sit in an office 40 hours per week, because that's just a choice that I make, and also, it can be a healing experience or an educational experience. You can explore your own sexuality in a safe way, in a safe environment. And it's so much broader than just one side of the coin of being abused or the other side of the coin. It's
right.
Totally empowering.
Many people think that sex workers, the only reason that they would do sex work is because they've been damaged, like because they've been abused or something.
Yeah. And that's even though that happens, I mean, there is people that work in sex work because they are damaged. There are people who work in other fields because they are damaged. Or there are people who...
That's true. Some people become psychotherapists.
Right.
They're I really need to figure this out. I'm going to go to school for 5 years.
Oh, right. I went to school to become a counselor, and like half of the people that I studied with were becoming my clients.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
I actually have a question. So you said that it could be healing sometimes for the sex worker. Could you speak a little bit more about that?
Yes, I can. I've spoken to a few people who have said so, that they said they either come from a very restricted family, or they have had traumatizing events happening to them, and by exploring their own sexualities and exploring their feelings of desire and their feelings of hurt in a safe way, they get to learn that they actually enjoy sex. And that can be a healing process.
Yeah, I've had stories from different sex workers who were like, whoa, I love having sex with women, or I love fisting people. I can fist anyone. Their first time, they're going to have a great experience with me. And I'm like, really? How empowering for you? Because this person used to only have sex in this particular way and not get a lot of pleasure from it. And then after doing porn, which, you know, I'm not going to say that this is the pathway for everyone for sexual healing, but some people really find like, wow, this has really opened my eyes to things that I really love.
Yeah. And that's what I've heard too. I heard from someone who told me like, I never knew about suspension sex and being dominated while hanging up on ropes. I actually had never even heard of that. So, I mean, that has opened my eyes. But she told me, like, by doing that on camera, she found out that she loved that. That was something she really liked. And before that, she would not have tried it out, because it also is something you can't just try out at home, because you know
how
to do that knot.
Yes, exactly.
It has to be secure. You don't want to fall off and all these kind of things. And I think also, not just for the people who do it, although they are the focus of my research, the women, and mostly women, but femme-identified queers is the other group that I'm studying.
So you're not studying men?
No, well, I've also for my PhD, but now for my master's
you
thesis,
have to make it smaller.
I have to make it smaller, yeah. But I will be back and we'll investigate the man too.
Excellent.
Yeah. I'm right here. I'll give my contact.
But we'll get married.
Not a sex worker. Bless your heart.
Oh, that's right.
Yes. You do have to be a sex worker to be involved in the research or in the alternative porn scene in San Francisco. So.
And Monica just assumes I'm not.
Okay. You want to talk about that, Malcolm?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, just checking. So you've been talking to different kinds of communities and people, organizations, porn houses.
Yes. I've been at shoots.
Yeah.
At porn shoots.
You toured kink.com.
At touredkink.com. I'll be at some of the shoots in the next couple of weeks at kink also. I've been
and
at
there's
the Crash
another,
Pad.
Yeah, Crash Pad. Tell me about Crash Pad.
Crash Pad is queer porn. I had never heard of that one before, but I met people through while doing my research, and they invited me to be at one of their shoots, and that was the first porn shoot I was ever at, just live, right there.
Right.
And I could talk to the models before and after the shoot, and it was eye opening for me too. Although I've seen a lot of porn, all academically. How do you say that? All in the name
for
of science.
Research, yes. You're just doing research. Yes, that's fine.
But it was the first
time. But it's interesting to like actually talk to the person who's having this experience and being like, you're really liking this? What's happening for you? How do you like this? Whatever it is.
Before and after. I would meet up and talk to the people that were doing the shoot. And they would tell me where they came from how they got there on the bus or on the BART or whatever. And then... So I talked to them, and then I watched them do the shoot, and they came back. And while I was watching it, was super hot, seriously. And they came back, and they were all rosy colored and looked like they really had a great time.
Right.
And that made it for me also, that was really...
Right, and they're smiling.
They were smiling and happy and just like, just have to relax now or smoke a cigarette or whatever. But just...
Right.
Well, just like real sex, because it was real sex. That was the thing. And I really, really liked that experience.
Right. Well, and I think with different companies, you're going to find different things, you know. So someone who does queer porn might be having a more personal experience. Like in our last interview, we talked to, not only did we talk to Alice in Bondage Land, but we also talked to Arabelle Raphael, who worked at a queer porn studio. And you know, she said, well, when I'm doing queer porn, I'm just having sex with all my friends.
Yeah, and that's what it looked like, too, on the shows and on the porn videos that I've watched of Crash Pad series. They look like they're having a great time. They tell me they have a great time. They are on a waiting list to be on camera. I mean, there's people that really even offer to pay to be filmed instead of getting paid.
That's interesting.
The director told me that she had never thought of that before, but of course,
like
she is paying.
Could be a business model. Sure.
Yeah,
okay.
Could be.
You do some queer porn, don't you, Ava?
Not explicitly. Crash Pad said that within the next year they would like to work with me.
Okay.
Mostly
but they
it's
have
just
that big
the
long waiting list.
Yeah,
they have
that waiting
list.
Mostly it's just been like self-shot stuff. I'm on the women's POV, which Maxine,
the point of view,
is the porn goddess of that.
Yeah.
And some mainstream hairy porn.
Right. So Point of View is actually a really interesting project that we should mention, because a lot of the porn in the real world is shot from the point of view, like it's a male point of view. It's, kind of a top down thing, but like really choosing, like the performer getting to choose the point of view of the angle, like it's you're shooting it yourself. Almost like, you know, you take your own picture with your cell phone camera kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about what that's like.
It's great, actually. I mean, if I could choose to only submit POV porn, I totally would. Yeah, the first I did a photo set of sort of, I'm from the Midwest, and so I went back, it was over the summer, I went back home, just like hiked out to a metro park. I guess this is an example of how porn can be kind of healing. I was trying to reclaim some space. And as kind of an abstract concept, like my time as a younger person was like not great. So yeah, I went back to the Midwest, hiked out to this park, took the photo set, and then also I was hanging out with a former lover of mine at the time, and we also, at a different park, shot a video, which ended up on the website, and that was just really cool. It's really cool to just pass the camera back and forth, to not really know what images you're getting when you're just, like, holding it up, like, you know.
pointing at yourself. I'm in the shot, maybe I'm not.
Right. And then to rewatch some of it and, like, hear the sounds that you make and just see how big, like, the movements are. And compositionally, it was really exciting because it was outside. Mm-hmm. I'm also kind of an art nerd, so I'm just into visual things.
Like, it's not
and
only performance,
performance
art, but it's also like theater. You were talking about the future of theater and sex.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us more about that.
Some,
what are your dreams for the future of sex theater?
Theories. Well, Cum and Glitter is very much like, yes, it is sex performance, but someday I would love to have more traditional, I guess, like contemporary theater, but with a very explicit sexual element to it. So like with theater, you get to know the characters really well. You're pretty invested in their emotional process, their relationships. But then it's like always left out, or very often left out, sex, or you don't see it, or it's just implied.
Mm-hmm.
So why not have, you know, these great dramatic productions, but also have really good sex in them? I don't know if it would work. I'm still kind
I'm
of
not
like
saying it's not going to work.
I know. I mean, I don't
isn't
know.
It's funny how no one's doing that right
it
now.
It might not work. And if they're doing it, why don't I know about it yet?
Yeah.
So if you're listening to this and you know sex, something, contact me, because I want to do more research, because I want to read the plays and watch them.
Right.
So I think that there's some potential for that, or even with like short scenes or like monologues. Like I have visions for the next Cum and Glitter shows. I really want to work with somebody and like make a scene that is so polished, like work on lines and work on blocking and just make it the best it can be, so it does become this like short little monologue or like two-person scene that you can follow a plot, or a very simple plot, and maybe there's like some, maybe it's complicated or emotional, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But with great sex too.
Yes. Well, it's interesting how we have made this huge separation between sex and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's something that Rukama's work is about, too, is like, well, how do we use public platforms, which usually the difference between public and sex is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sex usually isn't public. You know, which is why things like public disgrace at kink.com, like that's like, oh, my God, I can't believe they did that to someone out in public. You know, that's where all the intensity comes from. But what starts to happen as we take sex into the public sphere, like into public discourse, and we start talking about it and start showing it?
Yeah, well, I think one of the things that I just said is that people that work in porn can find it healing, or a way to explore their sexualities, or a way to experiment with new things that they haven't tried before, and they want to just try it in a safe environment, which a porn situation can totally be. But also, especially, the porn production in the end can be a public platform, because the people that view it can look mm-hmm. at certain sexual acts or behaviors or whatever, and see like, oh, this is possible. I didn't know that was possible.
Exactly.
And it can be so educating for a lot of people, for mm-hmm. for everybody, really. Like if you've been sitting at home and have these fantasies and think you're weird, you can watch a movie like, I'm not weird, look, they're doing it too.
Right.
And, I mean,
and there's 50,000 people who are into whatever weird thing that I'm into.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Otherwise it wouldn't have been made. And
exactly.
Really every single filthy thought you've ever had has been filmed and put on camera, so that can it can give you this feeling like, I'm not the only one, and it's not weird. It's everybody has sexual feelings and desires, and you should enjoy it.
And now you can see it live.
Yay!
In person.
Yeah, there's a book about that. It's called A Billion Wicked Thoughts.
Oh, wow.
And it's a research project. It's all about all the fantasies like the things that people wouldn't actually necessarily talk about in an interview with, you know, maybe an anthropologist or something. But on the internet, you have this anonymity, you know, like, what are my desires? Oh, actually, I'm really into trans people, but I never get to see that or talk about that because it's not so out there in our culture. But I can, you know, they look at people's search strings, like, what are they searching for? And like, what's really interesting is they would have someone who's searching for like panties, and then they would have like women in panties, and then they would have like help for people who are addicted to porn or something, and like, and then there would be like, oh, because he was like searching, and then after searching felt guilty and then wanted to like, and I think it was some Christian outreach group that he was searching for, but in any case it's just interesting like how they could look at someone's search string and see where their desires kind of take them emotionally, intellectually.
Oh, that's interesting.
Isn't it interesting?
Mm-hmm.
yeah, a billion wicked thoughts.
I will look that one
out there too. And also, I was thinking of this porn that's educational but also a total triple X. I mean, it's called Sexing the Trans Man. And it's by Buck Angel.
Yeah, I heard that came out. I haven't seen it.
Yeah. I haven't actually watched the whole thing, but I saw a bunch of stills, and there, of course, Buck Angel is such, I'm going to say beautiful, but manly. Oh, manly, beautiful. And has a vagina. Maybe I don't call it a vagina. I don't know what to call it. Maybe you call it a front hole, something. Maybe you call it a clitoris. No, not a clitoris. That's the other direction. Ah.
Pussy. Okay.
You know, because it's a male part. So it's like trans cock. Okay. That's what you call it. Okay. Sorry, everyone. Sometimes talking about transgender is really difficult because it's so different than how we talk about sex in our culture that it really not only can stymie normal, but also people who've just read a pamphlet about it. I actually, over lunch, I was reading this great pamphlet about transgender safer sex. First of all, you call the parts different things. And then also, you know, you might need different kinds of safer sex supplies because, you know, maybe condoms don't work in quite the same way, or maybe a dental dam would like block access to, or maybe you just don't want to use something that's called a condom because those are always used with penises and you don't have a penis. Mm-hmm. You have a very large clitoris, mm-hmm. you know? Mm. So it's interesting with transgender sex, like how we don't know anything about it. And then if Buck Angel is making this beautiful film that's all about, not only is it about eroticism and, you know, celebrating the beauty and sexiness and hotness of these men, but also, oh, I'm actually learning what's going on with trans man's bits, which, you know, that's how you're supposed to say. You're supposed to say bits, apparently. So anyway. So some of the different platforms that you've been talking about in your work, I know that you've been with the porn companies.
Yeah, I've been with the porn companies. I've been to the Center for Sex and Culture. Mm. They organize a lot of events that are open to the public, and that their mission is to destigmatize alternative sexualities or all kinds of sexualities and sex work and just make it more open for everybody, which I really like the events that are organized there. So I've been there a few times. I've went to the Erotic Film Festival in Oakland last week called Briefs. It was really nice. It was sold out. I showed like, I think about 20 short movies all done by people in the Bay Area, short porn movies.
Mm-hmm.
It was great.
Yeah, there's a lot of different events in San Francisco right now. It's not only Come and Glitter tomorrow, but also the Second Base Party at Supper Club, which isn't a sex party, but it's kind of like halfway to that. So Second Base is just making out and toplessness.
Is that what it is? Because I was actually asking somebody that the other day, because I feel like my friends and I, we all have... I just never have used the whole basis thing. I think it's really weird.
It is weird.
But nobody knew
but
what
America,
that meant.
Baseball, you know, first base, second base.
I
first
think base straight people use the bases.
Yeah, probably. But I mean,
that's probably why I don't understand.
I don't know that I would necessarily use it. Not that I'm straight, but I play a straight person on TV. But in any case, like the first base is kissing, second base is making out, third base is genital play, but not sex, and a home run is penis, vagina, intercourse. in the back seat of a car if you're heterosexual and in high school.
Oh,
so
wow.
Anyway, that's what that means. Not saying that it's necessarily true.
Good
with
old
capital
PIV.
T.
All right.
Yeah,
okay. Interesting.
Right, okay. So the second
learning
phase
something
party,
new.
Exactly. That's what Sexploration with Monica is all about. The second base party is toplessness, making out, and they're actually doing a class on how consent and cat petting and feline sexual, you know what I mean? Like, not really petting a real cat, but like how to negotiate or how to tell if someone is a yes to you or not, like by actually reading their body language and like
without using words.
Yeah.
Huh. I don't know how I feel about that, but cool.
I mean, using words is good too.
Uh-huh.
It's important, but it's also nice for people to like, instead of getting drunk and just being like, oh, it was like right there, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like really being like, okay, how can I tell if someone wants to be touched?
Mm-hmm.
What if I put my hand on their shoulder and their shoulders kind of slouch in and they kind of move away from me a little bit and they start acting really stiff and weird? That's probably a no. You know, and if you put your hand on someone's shoulder and they smile and move closer to you, that's a good sign. You know, it's always good to ask, too.
Oh, and although, if they're visibly drunk, it's probably a no.
Right.
Don't do it. You can't consent when you're drunk. Mm-hmm. People are going to argue against that. But I'm so sick of hearing my friend's stories.
Yeah. Well, and
so just so you know, there's just a public service announcement.
What are some of the ways that people can ask for consent in sexy ways? Because I mean, sometimes it can feel really awkward to ask.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of known for just being really direct, and just
direct is sexy. By the way,
I know I feel that too, and so I guess. To keep going with the drunk thing, if you're in a situation and somebody's like really drunk and they're coming on to you and maybe you're not so drunk or it's the other way around, like it's okay to name it and to name behavior, I think, to be like, hey, you're really drunk right now. I really like you, but let's just sleep in the bed tonight and fuck all day tomorrow.
Exactly.
You know, or
we don't have to have sex right
or
now.
Or you can just, you know, hypothetical situation. You're both sober. You just went on a date. You're not sure, like, you know, maybe making out. I don't know. Should they go home? Should they stay over? I've said to somebody, I've been like, I really like you. I would like you in my bed if you want to be in my bed, and I would like to have sex with you. How do you feel about that?
Uh-huh.
Because that's not, you know, like if you ask open-ended questions to get responses,
totally.
Then you're not taking power from anybody. You're giving somebody the power to respond.
Right.
Hopefully they'll do so honestly. Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, this kind of brings me back to a mutual masturbation scene where I'm like, oh yeah, you know, if you're on a first date and you're not ready to have sex, you could just be like, you know, listen, we can't sleep because I know you're staying over because you have this class first thing in the morning in the city and you don't want to drive all the way to the South Bay or whatever. And it's going to be hard to sleep because we've been making out for hours in the car and now we're in my bed and I can't stop touching you unless I have an orgasm, but I don't want to have sex with you. So what do you do?
Masturbate.
Yay!
Yeah. No, that is so good though, to watch somebody masturbate. You can learn so much about their body.
Totally.
And then you're going to know when you have sex, how to have really great sex because you know what works for them.
Right. See? Sex education also.
Masturbate.
Woo.
Everybody, please.
Yeah, please. It's like a public service. So some more stuff. There's at El Rio on the 2nd, Friday, March 2nd, there's kind of a happy hour for Holly Stevens. She's the queen of clown porn. She's been fighting cancer, breast cancer, just had a mastectomy, big, wonderful person in the community, lusty lady dancer, contributing writer for Girls and Corpses. And they're doing a fundraiser because she's been doing radiation and chemotherapy. And that's coming up on Friday, March 2nd, El Rio, 4 to 6.
Clown porn? What is that?
Yeah, clown porn.
Red noses.
Well, yes. So there's this kind of sexy clown underground, and oftentimes it's spelled with a K. Like, there's actually a clown porn posse, and then there's some other clown porns that are at Kinky Salon that are kind of more associated with the Goofermen.
There's going to be clown porn at Come and Glitter. I just had to say it. Sorry.
No, it's totally good. Like, clown porn is this huge thing.
We love Kitty Stryker.
Yeah. Yay, Kitty Stryker. Okay. So the thing is like people get up in this face paint and like there's kind of this like sexy, but also kind of seedy, but also kind of... It's very tongue-in-cheek, and, you know, you can do anything when you're in clown mask because you're a different persona. And so sometimes people use that to be more salacious than ordinarily they would be, and that includes porn and all sorts of perversion, and I mean perversion in a good way. So, clown porn. That's Holly Stevens, Queen of Clown Porn, Friday, March 2nd at El Rio. And did I mention the gourmet dinner on the... Tomorrow's gourmet dinner is sold out? The 8-course gourmet dinner?
I read it on the email.
Yeah, because I've been meaning to mention that they're selling out so quickly that not only is this one sold out, but the one after that is sold out. So the next available one is the 24th of March. But they're going to start doing them more frequently. In addition, they're going to do a homoerotic dinner. So it's going to be all gay men and extra surprises and playfulness, you know, as you would have at a gay men, all gay men party. And that's coming up on the 31st of March. And if you want an invitation, it's a private party because, you know, there's some sexiness there. So you have to request an invitation and I can forward it to you at sexplorationwithmonica.com.
Great.
Yeah.
How about the one on the 24th?
How do we find that one online? Well, so it's because it's private. You can't. You just email me.
Okay, I'll do that.
Just email me. And it's March 24th. Are you going to still
be
here?
That will be my last
Yay!
Week.
March I have all 24th. The answers.
Oh, that's wonderful. Okay. Also, one more thing. Gay night at the Wax Museum, Fisherman's Wharf. It's a benefit for the Richmond Emmett AIDS Foundation and the Rainbow World Fund. So that's coming up as well. So much stuff going on in San Francisco.
I love San Francisco.
Yeah. Well, thank you, everyone, for coming on the show. Malcolm of the Verve Show, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Monica.
Mm-hmm. Ava Solaris, thank you for coming on Sexploration with Monica.
Thank you.
Comeandglitter.com for information.
Comeandglitter.com, and it's sold out, but if you want to watch it, we're streaming it on skinvideo.com.
Ooh.
Oh. So get some tokens. Get an account.
And Rukama Vanderhorn from the University of Amsterdam.
Yes, thank you, Monica.
You can download free podcasts at sexplorationwithmonica.com.